It's nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT. On 100.1 FM, it's your public radio station, broadcasting from Signal Hill here in Kodiak, Alaska, where it's 23 degrees, and they are looking at northwest winds 12 miles per hour out at the airport. We're looking for sunny skies for the rest of the day and a high near 29. Those northwest winds are expected to continue today and tonight, turn to the west tomorrow. For tonight, look for mostly clear skies, a low around 20. For tomorrow night, snow is likely, mainly after 3 a.m. And for Thursday, we're looking at rain and snow showers. Coming up on the Midday Report, Kodiak Island Borough School District Superintendent Larry Ledoux reflects on his upcoming retirement. Our ongoing series on the Alaska Native Claims Settlements Act goes on with a focus on Sea Alaska Corporation. And four lawsuits have been filed against the Alaska Redistricting Board seeking to change parts of a legislative map they drew last month.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. At least 100 people in Kentucky are still unaccounted for since Friday's tornadoes. Governor Andy Beshear says there is so much destruction, he still expects more bodies will be found. This hour, the death toll in Kentucky stands at 74. The oldest known victim was 98 years old. The youngest was 2 months old. Disaster responses are also underway in Arkansas, Missouri, Tennessee, and Illinois. At least 14 lives lost in those states. At the White House, Press Secretary Jen Psaki addresses the federal response a day before President Biden visits Kentucky.
The president approved emergency disaster declarations for Illinois and Tennessee last night, in addition to the major disaster declaration he approved for Kentucky.
The White House is also following two major developments in Congress this afternoon. The evenly split Senate has yet to clear a debt limit increase without GOP support. It averts an unprecedented default. Also, the full House is expected to vote on recommending a criminal contempt charge against former White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows for refusing to cooperate with a congressional probe into the January attack on the U.S. Capitol. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention has released the first estimate for how widely the Omicron variant of coronavirus has already spread in the United States. NPR's Rob Stein has the latest.
Nationally, the CDC estimates the Omicron variant accounts for about 3% of the infections the agency has analyzed so far. But there appears to be a big variation around the country. Omicron, for example, looks like it's accounting for about 13% of infections in the New York, New Jersey area. It's now been detected in at least 33 states. And the variant seems to be spreading very rapidly in other countries, doubling every few days. So there's a good chance that Omicron could overtake the Delta variant in the U.S. soon and become the dominant variant. Public health experts are alarmed about Omicron because it seems to be the most contagious variant yet and looks like it's better at dodging protection from the immune system. Rob Stein, NPR News.
A major storm is battering Southern California, closing roads and prompting flash flood warnings. But as NPR's Nathan Raw tells us, it's also bringing much needed rain.
You wouldn't think it hearing all the rain around me right now, but pretty much every part of California is dealing with some degree of drought. And the same could be said for much of the larger West. The atmospheric river blasting California with rain and snow right now could put a dent in that deficit and restock some depleted reservoirs. But scientists say the region is experiencing a decades-long mega drought, one of the driest periods in 1,000 years. And climate change is a big contributor. To dig out of that hole, California will need to be much wetter this winter than normal, and more storms are needed like this. Nathan Rott, NPR News.
It's NPR.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
Alaska has identified its first case of the Omicron variant of the coronavirus. Anchorage health officials announced the case in a statement yesterday afternoon. The city health department says the person is an Anchorage resident who recently tested positive following international travel in November. The case was identified yesterday through genomic sequencing at the Alaska Public Health Laboratory. Alaska joins at least 30 other states to have confirmed cases of the new variant. Kodiak Island Borough School District Superintendent Larry Ledoux has announced he'll step down at the end of the school year after 44 years in education. KMXT spoke with Ledoux on Monday about his decision to retire. He says he feels his legacy will be borne out in positive student outcomes and the quality of staff at district schools.
During the first year, I addressed the entire staff, invited them to be immortal, and that is to be the kind of teacher that affect the lives of kids so that when their kids have kids, they tell them about those incredible teachers and support staff members who really change their lives and help give them direction and purpose.
Ledoux was hired as superintendent in 2017. He served for a decade as principal of Kodiak's North Star Elementary before he was tapped as former Governor Sarah Palin's education commissioner in 2008. He later served as a Kodiak Borough Assemblyman. Ledoux says he's confident the district will find a capable replacement.
One of the things you learn in any job is that the system goes on just fine without you. But one of the things I tried to do different in this particular job is to make sure that if I wasn't here, there were a strong support staff ready to carry on. And so I'm not really worried.
He says that choosing to retire was not easy.
This is the hardest decision I've ever made. It feels like the right decision, but it's not a decision when you leave a job that's been so wonderful for 47 years that I want to celebrate. But we'll see. My wife is, I think, making plans for me. She's got a long list that's been neglected for a long time.
Ledoux officially steps down in June. For decades, Sea Alaska Corporation harvested old-growth timber from the Tongass National Forest. The business was profitable, but it divided communities and even pitted family members against each other. Now, the Southeast Regional Native Corporation is getting paid millions to leave trees standing, and it's looking toward the ocean for profits, too. In the last story in our series, Alaska Public Media's Nat Herz took a trip to Juneau to see how Sea Alaska is seeking to better merge its business with its indigenous values.
It's a drizzly day as Joe Nelson motors his little boat out of a harbor near Juneau. Nelson is a hunter and fisherman, and we're out for a harvest. But this is actually a business trip. Nelson chairs the board of the native-owned Sea Alaska, one of Alaska's largest corporations, which has set its sights on
like
kelp.
It, but there's right like some float.
The birds are and things?
Yeah.
I think it might be,
yeah, that looks kind of kelpy.
Once Nelson gets us into a thick patch of kelp, we walk back to the stern to pull some up and drop it into a cooler.
Oh, I see. Yeah, they are attached. So you just broke it. There we go.
Wild.
Nelson grew up in the coastal town of Yakutat, harvesting other kinds of seaweed, but not kelp, which, with its deep, dark stem and leafy fronds, looks kind of alien.
I wouldn't have thought to eat it. So it's actually a pretty cool find as far as getting this into the mass market here and realizing it actually tastes pretty good.
Sea Alaska, Nelson's company, has a master plan for kelp. And when we head back to shore, we're going to hear about it. But before we get there, we need to take a detour to Sea Alaska's downtown Juneau boardroom to understand how the company got there. That's where we find Sea Alaska's chief executive, Anthony Malott. Malott, like Nelson, is Tlingit and grew up in Yakutat, but his professional background is in decidedly urban realms of finance and investing. And he says that when he started working at Sea Alaska, its leaders and the leaders of other native regional corporations had spent decades leaning away from their culture.
There was a pretty heavy mantra that your fiduciary duty just to make money, don't let the community stuff or the value stuff get in that way, or you may risk foregoing your fiduciary duty. We called it hiding behind the fiduciary shield.
Since Sea Alaska's creation in 1972, following the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act, its experience with capitalism could best be described as mixed. It invested in and divested itself from a string of businesses that didn't really stick, including a plastics company that made Brita water containers and caps for jugs of Tide detergent.
We had Alaska Brick Company, we had a tow company, logistics company. I mean, you could go down the history list. We never had the right formula to grow and create the economic value from those businesses that we needed.
See, Alaska did have one business that consistently made money, but it was polarizing: commercial timber harvesting. Many shareholders supported logging, but many shareholders opposed it because of clear cutting's impacts on subsistence hunting and salmon harvesting. A few years into Malott's career at Sea Alaska, the corporation was running out of timber to cut. Its other subsidiaries were running into serious problems, and in 2013, cost overruns at a construction project caused huge losses. Sea Alaska decided to sell nearly all of its businesses.
It was a financial crisis that gave us full mandate to make significant change.
This was the point when Sea Alaska leaders really began bringing indigenous values into the boardroom, starting with developing a vision around Ha'ani, their ancestral homelands. Ultimately, the corporation reorganized its businesses around an ocean health theme, which leaders say reflects their growing awareness of the threats posed by climate change. Nelson, the board chairman, says Sea Alaska realized it had to invest in things its shareholders and leaders cared about and were interested in, and describes the new approach in opposite terms from the old one. The old one, he says, was thinking,
we're going to be indigenous culture bearers, you know, on the weekends, but from Monday to Friday, we're going to be in the boardroom doing business, capitalists, and separating those things. And you really shouldn't separate those two things.
One of Sea Alaska's first investments under this new way of thinking was in seafood, an industry that leaders say is both relevant and meaningful to them. And the corporation has made other moves away from traditional natural resource extraction. In the past few years, Sea Alaska has been paid more than $100 million to keep its timber unharvested for use as carbon offsets. And earlier this year, it announced it's getting out of the old growth logging business altogether. And that takes us back to kelp, which means heading down the road a few miles to an anonymous-looking warehouse.
Probably a beard net for you. Beard net can go under your mask.
That's Leah Heifetz, one of the founders of Barnacle Foods, the startup that runs this industrial-sized kitchen, which, by the way, is perfumed with the smell of minced garlic and fermented serrano peppers.
Yes, we're making serrano bull whip, so hot sauce today. We're gonna spend the next hour getting everything in the kettle and then heat it up and then we'll jar it.
The main ingredient in this hot sauce is, as you might have guessed by now, bull kelp. Heifetz and her business partners have built Barnacle from a tiny homegrown company into a commercial-scale enterprise based largely on selling kelp-based foods like salsas and pickles. This year, it's set to sell something like $1 million in products. Matt Kern is Heifetz's partner and co-founder.
So we've more or less doubled or tripled our production and sales every year since starting the business back in 2016 at the little farmers market.
With the company growing so quickly, Barnacle wanted an investor. And guess who's at the top of the list?
This idea of, you know, sharing this company and the vision for this region with Sea Alaska and to be owned by 25,000 shareholders was like the most ideal scenario in our minds.
The deal for a minority stake in Barnacle wasn't a slam dunk. The company is smaller scale than most of Sea Alaska's investments, but Sea Alaska leaders say they were sold on the potential for Barnacle to hire native shareholders. And it didn't hurt that they really liked eating the salsa, too. Here's Nelson.
If you just contrast this product, which you will find in all the stores and in my cupboards and in my refrigerator, with the products we were involved in the late 90s, Philly cream cheese cups and Tide bottle caps, I would say there's a definite contrast and different sense of affinity for, you know, the type of business we're in. And so, yeah, you know, this salsa and this hot sauce, it's actually pretty darn good.
Sea Alaska's transition into climate-friendly industries like kelp and carbon credits has drawn enthusiasm, particularly from younger shareholders. But the corporation still faces deep skepticism from some of its older shareholders, many of whom were alienated by the corporation's decades of cutting down old-growth timber. Sea Alaska leaders say their evolution is far from done. They're now drafting a 100-year plan and putting millions into a trust fund aimed at building a post-logging economy for Southeast Alaska. If the corporation is now Sea Alaska 2.0, Nelson says they're still trying to envision Sea Alaska 3.0. In Anchorage, I'm Nat Herz.
Four lawsuits have been filed against the Alaska Redistricting Board, seeking to change parts of the legislative map it adopted last month. Each lawsuit argues that the communities were wrongly placed in the same district with other communities they have little in common with. KTOO and Alaska Public Media's Andrew Kitchenman has the story.
Three of the lawsuits were filed by municipalities. Skagway argued in its lawsuit that it has much closer ties to downtown Juneau than it does with the Mendenhall Valley area of Juneau. But the new map includes Skagway and its neighbor Haines with the Mendenhall Valley. Both the Matanuska-Susitna Borough and the city of Valdez argue in their suits that they shouldn't share district boundaries with each other. Matsu Borough Manager Michael Brown points out that the legislative districts drawn for the borough have more residents than those in other parts of the state. He says the board could have used its mapping programs to draw districts with more even population numbers.
It doesn't make a lot of sense to us. It doesn't have to be that way. And with the technology that exists today, it's pretty easy to draw these lines and know exactly where you are.
Valdez City Manager Mark Detter says it makes more sense for Valdez to be in a district with the Richardson Highway communities or those around the Prince William Sound than to be in one with part of Matsu.
We don't share many commonalities socioeconomically or obviously in terms of our geography.
While the three lawsuits filed by municipalities focused on House districts, the fourth lawsuit focused on the Senate districts, which pair two House districts together. In particular, the lawsuit by three Anchorage residents raises a series of concerns with the board pairing two parts of Eagle River with the South Muldoon and Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson neighborhoods. The lawsuit says the two Eagle River House districts should have been paired together into one compact Senate district. Joelle Hall is a member of a coalition that is providing financial support for this lawsuit. Hall is also the president of the State Labor Union Federation.
Folks came out on the record and said, absolutely do not pair Eagle River with East Anchorage. We've seen it before. We don't like it. Don't do it again.
Hall says that it's possible that if the lawsuit is successful, the Senate pairings could be changed ahead of this year's election. But the House districts are less likely to change before the election because of the complexities of drawing new district boundaries. In a brief emailed statement, the board said it will review the challenges and, quote, respond through the court system as contemplated by the Alaska Constitution, end quote. It said it wouldn't be appropriate to comment further. In Juneau, I'm Andrew Kitchenman.
Leaders of the Anchorage Assembly are asking for information following a blog's allegations that Mayor Dave Bronson's administration inappropriately pressured the police chief and interfered with the fluoridation of Anchorage water. Alaska Public Media's Lex Trinan has this report.
Citing anonymous sources, the Alaska Landmine blog says the Bronson administration tried to pressure APD to enter a medical facility to rescue a man sick with COVID and possibly compel medical providers to treat him with ivermectin. And it alleges the mayor may have turned off the fluoride in the city's water supply during a visit to the water plant. The Landmine claims the request from the mayor's office led to Anchorage Police Chief Ken McCoy announcing he'll resign after less than a year on the job. McCoy, reached by phone on Monday evening, said he won't comment on the matter at this time. He referred to Corey Allen Young, a spokesperson for the mayor, who denied the three separate allegations made by the Landmine. Quote, for all three of these questions, the answer is this is false. These did not happen, end quote, Young wrote in an email on Monday. Bonnie Salisbury, the daughter of Dan O'Barr, the patient the Landmine says was possibly the subject of the planned hospital intervention, said that her family never contacted the mayor's office or asked for ivermectin. She says her family had contacted Republican State Senator Mike Schauer of Wasilla over the hospital's visitation policy, which prevented O'Barr's wife from visiting. Salisbury said she was not aware of any attempt to remove O'Barr from the hospital where he was staying or interfere with his treatment. On Sunday, the leaders of the Anchorage Assembly sent a request for all of the voicemails, emails, or text messages about the incidents to the Records Management Office of the city and to Patrick Burke, the city attorney. It sent a separate request to the Anchorage Water and Wastewater Utility asking for information about the landmines allegation and the mayor's visits to the plant. In Anchorage, I'm Lex Trenin.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. Alaska's salmon are smaller. How might that affect markets? More after this.
The Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute works to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. Learn more at alaskaseafood.org.
Since 2010, Alaska salmon have been getting smaller. That conclusion is based on 60 years of measurements from 12.5 million salmon across Alaska, excluding pinks. A study by Nature Communications has compared average body lengths before 1990 and after 2010. Chinook salmon have shown the most size reduction, averaging an 8% decline, compared to 3.3% in cohos, 2.4% in chum salmon, and a 2.1% shrinkage in sockeyes. Researchers speculate that rising water temperatures in lakes and streams have prompted salmon to head out to sea far sooner than normal. The drop in time spent in freshwater slows down fish maturity, increases time at sea, and the salmon return at younger ages to spawn. How might smaller fish affect markets? Smaller fish produce lower yields. Tasha Cadence is with Tradex, a global seafood trading company based in Canada, for over 30 years.
Anyone who smokes their salmon has a very specific recipe guideline in order to produce a consistent product. Therefore, if they typically were to use a 4 to 6-pound sockeye and the catch is heavy on the 2 to 4-pound sockeye, they have to retool the whole operation.
The smaller size also hurts processors who sell fish portions.
These changes in processing could directly affect companies who make prepackaged and portioned flavored retail items for freezers.
The smaller salmon could affect short-term values. In the longer term, Tradex predicts that a shortage of wild salmon inventories will lead to pricing gains as buyers, quote, lean towards the demand for smaller salmon. Find links at alaskafishradio.com. Fish Radio is also brought to you by OBI Seafoods, serving Alaska's fishing communities since 1910. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon. Welcome to your Island Messenger for Tuesday. It is the 14th day of December, the year 2021. The sun rose today at 9:47. It will set again at 4:21. That will give us 6 hours and 34 minutes of daylight, a loss of only 1 minute and 6 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record high for this date was 45. That was set in 2017 and 2019. And the record low is 3, set in 1925. Currently a relatively warm 24 degrees out at the airport with wind speeds from the west at 18, gusting to 25 right now. Sunny skies for the rest of the afternoon with northwest winds to 20. Mostly clear skies tonight with a low around 20. Mostly sunny skies tomorrow with a high near 32. And on Wednesday night, we're looking for snow, mainly after 4 a.m. tomorrow night. Mostly cloudy skies tomorrow night with a low around 25. And snow showers are expected on Thursday, mostly before 7 a.m. Then they're thinking it's going to turn to rain and snow between 7 a.m. and 1 p.m. on Thursday. Looking at our local tides, we have a low tide coming up here on the east side at 5:29 p.m. That will be a 1 foot tide, followed by a high tide at 11:42 p.m. of 6.3 feet. Our low tide for the wee hours will be at 4:54 a.m. and be 2.8 feet. And our high tide for tomorrow morning on the east side will be at 11:15 a.m. and be 8.8 feet. Over on the west side, you have a low tide coming up at 5:58 p.m. of 1.4 feet in Larson Bay. That'll be followed by a high tide right after 12:05 p.m., 10.7 feet. Your next low tide will be at 5:42 in the morning and be 3.9 feet. And your high tide for tomorrow morning on the west side will happen at 11:47 a.m. and be 13.9 feet in Larsen Bay. Mariners, we have a gale warning today for Marmot Island to Sitka, Kodiak's east side offshore. For today, northwest 35 and seas to 9 feet with freezing spray. That freezing spray should lessen as the afternoon goes by. For tomorrow, variable 10, north of Dangerous Cape, northwest 20, becoming variable 10, seas to 7 feet. Over in the Shelikof, small craft advisory through tonight. Northeast 25, shifting to northwest this morning. Seas to 6 feet with freezing spray in the Shelikof. For tomorrow, look for northeast 15 and seas to 4 feet. There will be a Board of Education special meeting happening at 1 p.m. today. That is just a little more than a half an hour from now. That's happening in room F-140 of the old high school wing. The meeting will be streamed through BlueJeans, and login information is posted on the Kodiak Island Borough School District website. That's at www.kibsd.org under the Board of Education tab. If you'd like to call Bianca Clark, Secretary of the Board of Education, her number is 907-486-7566. The KMXT Board of Directors will be holding their next regular monthly meeting this Wednesday. That's tomorrow at 6:30 p.m. via Zoom. If you would like to sit in on this meeting, please call the station at 486-3181 or send an email requesting access to gm@kmxt.org, and a link will be provided to you before the meeting. Fire Protection Area Number 1 is having their board meeting tonight. That's happening at 6:30 p.m. in the Bayside Fire Hall. Tomorrow, the City of Kodiak and the Kodiak Island Borough Cooperative Relations Committee will hold a meeting. That's happening at 4 p.m. in the Borough Assembly Chambers. This meeting is open to the public. Meeting packets and agendas are available at the City of Kodiak website. Call the clerk from the city at 486-8636 or the borough clerk at 486-9310 for more information. And on Wednesday, a global Christmas sing-along is happening. And right here on KMXT, just tune in Wednesday at 7 p.m., gather the family, and raise your voices in song. You can sing from your living room, front porch, car, anywhere you want. Song list and lyrics are available at the school district website. That's www.kibsd.org. Senior citizens of Kodiak and the Kodiak Area Transit System are happy to announce that the annual Christmas Light Tour is back. The light tour will be held December 17th at 6 p.m. Be at the center front door by 5:45 p.m. and the tour will begin at 6. Space is limited, so you want to call them right now at 486-6181 and they will get you on the list. And Skate with Santa is coming up this coming Sunday, December 19th. It's happening from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. at the Baranoff Park Ice Rink. Always such a lot of fun for the kids and for Santa, too. Join Santa and friends for skating and hot cocoa. Again, that's at the Baranoff Park Ice Rink this next Sunday, 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. The library will be holding two holiday craft sessions each Saturday that will repeat through December 18th. These sessions are suitable for ages 8 and older and limited to 11 persons per session, so sign-ups are requested. Give them a call at the library at 486-8686 to sign up. They have one session at 10:30 a.m. and a second one at 2 each Saturday. And the featured artist at the Ludic Museum for this Saturday is Susie Malutin and Emerald Isle Essentials. Just drop by the Ludic Museum during their hours, which are noon to 4 p.m., and they are at 215 Mission Road. And it's a good time to go to the Ludic Museum because it's free through December 23rd, courtesy of Matson. And the Kodiak Hospital Auxiliary have put up their Angels of Love holiday trees at the hospital. Each angel placed on the trees bears the name of a person being honored or remembered. The angels remain on the trees through the holiday season and can be obtained for a $10 donation. All donations are placed in the Auxiliary's Scholarship Fund to offer scholarships for individuals pursuing a career in healthcare. You can make your donation at the hospital admissions desk or stop by their table at Safeway on Saturday between 10 a.m. and 6 p.m.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.